Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I am Dale Kay from Spook Show and Eerie House, and I'm here with
Dave Binkley from The Weirdest Really Bad Movie and various other places. And you have some special
others.
Guests.
Yeah, we do. As we continue our weekend talking about the devil, we do have something of interest coming up. And our friends from Bad Moon Productions are here. I want to welcome to Eerie House Radio, Aaron. Aaron, welcome.
Hi, thank you. It's awesome to be here.
Yep. We met some years ago on Spook Show. You were with another organization, and you came in to show your makeup effects and talk a little bit about the haunt industry. And you're back today because you guys are doing a fundraiser. You're still doing that, of course, the haunt appearances. And you're doing a fundraiser for mental health. Tell us about it.
Yes, we are actually holding a charity event. It is called Mental Health Monster Mash. It is, we are raising money for an organization called NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And they have an organization that's national, statewide, and local. And we are having a costume contest and a raffle table, all to raise money for this charity, which they help people who have diagnosis of like bipolar, schizophrenic, depression, anxiety, PTSD, along with many, many other mental illnesses. And they're a really great organization, which is why we're trying to help them out and raise awareness. So to get into the event, it is $10, brand new items, office supplies, which will take $1 off of the ticket price, up to $5. And
so, like, you could bring up to 5 items and get in for $5 instead of 10.
Correct. And we have a ton of entertainment that we are having, including the Monster Dolls, who are making a special appearance and will be performing there as well. But we have a lot of awesome vendors and entertainers that are coming out, and we're really pushing the costume contest. The last winner was Jeff Stover, so we're going to see who can actually bring their A game and be able to top him if they could take his crown.
Well, that's awesome.
I have a box of 1,000 staples. We can both get it.
Well, that could always
staples.
Work.
No, I we appreciate, of course, you doing the good work there, trying to raise money and awareness of these medical conditions. As far as the costume contest, that's going to be tough competition, I'm sure, because if anybody's seen your stuff, either live here in Northeast Ohio at the various haunts that you guys appear at, but also just some of the great pictures you posted online. Recently, your characters are absolutely frightening. You want to tell folks a little bit about Bad Moon Productions and your characters and what you do?
What Bad Moon Productions is, we're an acting troupe, but we also do, we travel acts, so it's not just strictly to Ohio. And we do host charity events and teach special effects makeup. We have various characters. Mine, for example, mine goes by the name Orphanage Freak, and she goes by many other names as well, but it's all the same character, which her personality, she has multiple personalities, which plays perfect with our event. So any character I ever do automatically ties in to Orphanage. It's just a different personality of hers. And then we have Miss Mr. Koo is the founder of the event, or founder of the group, and he is a demented clown who has issues with other clowns, so he was always picked on. And we have Skullhead, who has a very interesting background as well, and various other characters that are in the group.
Now, I've met Craig, you know, Skullhead before, and is Mr. Giggles who I think it is? Is that Mark?
Mr. Tickles, but yes, that is Mark.
Tickles.
Yes.
Yeah,
Those are awesome.
I just post a link to your Facebook page in our chat room, so if there's some interest there, click on that link, and you'll be able to get more information on Bad Moon Productions.
Awesome. That sounds great.
Now, the fundraiser here is, of course, going to be in the Northeast Ohio area. It's a suburb called Maple Heights, and it's right at 14832 Keys Road. That is going to be what date?
June 16th.
Okay. 21 and older. ID required.
Yes, they will be checking at the door.
Yeah.
Yes.
But show up and help out, and plus you get to see a lot of great horror people doing their thing.
Yes, please come and support the cause. It's for an awesome cause.
Yep. Yep. And do you have any other appearances coming up soon that you want to talk about, or?
There is one. Are we still doing Blood Prison? We are going to be doing an event at, it's called Incarceration. It's going to be at Blood Prison in Mansfield, Ohio. Pretty sure it's a 3-day event, and we'll be doing, I'm pretty sure, Saturday and Sunday for that. And we are planning on hosting another charity event, which we believe will be in November, but we haven't set a date on that yet.
So you guys don't just keep busy at Christmas. You're plugging away all year long.
Yeah, we try to keep busy all year, and we also will travel to different conventions. And even some of the haunts, a lot of the haunts have been opening up for various random weekends. It doesn't even have to be a holiday. But that's more of a newer thing that they're starting to incorporate. But we haven't been able to make it out there in the off season because we have been busy in the off season with various events.
Now, I thought I saw you guys post something where Mr. Tickles got to meet up with Bill Moseley. Is that right?
Yes, we actually met up with Bill Moseley, and Bill Moseley was trying to help us promote the event. And Bill actually nicknamed Mr. Tickles Mr. Nipples. So that is a new name for him.
That's great. He's a nice fella and makes a lot of the events. Which event did you meet him up at?
We just met him at Days of the Dead in Charlotte, North Carolina. Where we're at right now. And he does tend to go to a lot of other events. He's usually one of the more common names at a lot of the conventions. Very sweet guy.
Yeah. You guys were so much fun to work with when you came to visit the studio. And I think we were doing a zombie-themed show It was a lot of fun. You guys were so easy to work with. You're very, very, very professional to have work with on over at Amherst City Cable. That was fun.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that as well.
Yep. Well, we're doing all devil stuff this weekend, of course, and you know, the devil, he can be devilishly handsome or ugly as hell, but he's always something that's been scary in movies, television, and yes, radio too. Huh, Dave?
Absolutely. I think the scariest thing that he does is deviled eggs. But other than that, yes, it's a lot of radio. We presented some of the shows that are devil related and voodoo and things like that, but we've been concentrating on the man himself this weekend, the devil and Satan. And last night with the devil scrapbook, and we had the one and only episode of the devil scrapbook, and that was a heck of a lot of fun. A very good show. Please tune into the archives to hear that. Tonight we've got a CBS radio workshop and some Red Skelton. As you remember, last night on the show, Red Skelton trapped the devil in his closet. And tonight we have part
two. The devil needs to come out of the closet.
Yes. And you know what? And I don't think I want to see what he's wearing. But we've got some Red Skelton tonight as Junior and a couple of his other characters, as well as another wonderful episode of CBS Radio Workshop. And Dale, this is one of the shows you're familiar with.
Yes. I happened to hear it on one of those weekends where I got free satellite radio. It came on, and I fell in love with the story because, first of all, it's an Edgar Allan Poe classic. It has elements of horror, but it also has elements of comedy worked into it, too.
It does, and this is when I was doing our half-hour radio drama, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this show because I don't think there's anybody who's ever done, I mean, the title is so intriguing, Never Bet the Devil Your Head, that I would think that nobody had ever done it before, and I realized that the CBS radio workshop did a fine job of it with both John Daner and one of our favorites, Mr. Dawes.
It's a real good story, folks. You want to stick around for that. We're going to play part one in just a few seconds here. I want to ask Aaron, are you or any of your staff, are you familiar with any of the old-time radio shows?
Not exactly. No, we're not.
If you get a chance, listen to as many as you can when you have, it's great when you have to travel if you got a bunch of them on disc or something like that, because you will find how much television and movies were inspired by these old shows or the old horror comics. There's just so much of that. We talked about that at length there on the show recently. But it's truly amazing where you see where television shows sprang from, where movies came from. And sometimes it worked the other way around. Sometimes the movies came out first and it appeared with an interesting version on radio, and that's what we like to share here on Erie House Radio.
Sounds pretty interesting. I'd like to check it out.
Yep.
And this one takes us back to July 28th of 1957. I mean, I mean 50, 60, 70, 71 years ago almost. It's just amazing when you think that these have been around that long. And hopefully finding a rebirth right here on Erie House Radio.
Yep, and Aaron, we want to thank you for calling in. You're more than welcome to stick around. We're going to play part one. It's about 12 minutes long, and come back and talk a little more. So you can either stick around. I'm going to put you on hold while we put on part one. And if you got to go, I understand. I know you're at the gig this weekend. So thanks, and good luck with the fundraiser for mental health over at the Maple Grove Tavern.
No, and thank you so much for having us.
All righty. We'll see you soon. Here's part one of Never Bet the Devil Your Head.
My name is Poe, Edgar Allan Poe. I write stories. Charges have been brought against me by certain ignoramuses that I have never written a tale with a moral. By way of mitigating these ridiculous accusations, I offer the following unusual history, a history about whose moral there can be no question whatsoever. For you can see the moral in its very title, Never Bet the Devil Your Head. And note, please, that I do not bring in the lesson at the tag end of the fable, as others are wont to do. Very well, here then I denounce my critics and beg no favor other than your close attention.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. The world too long thought of Edgar Allan Poe as a dour misogynist who concerned himself with black cats, gold bugs, pits, pendulums, and murder. Few realize, and fewer would believe, that this man of gloom had a sense of humor. This, the workshop now seeks to prove, in William N. Robeson's production of Edgar Allan Poe's satiric story, Never Bet the Devil Your Head, starring John Daner, with music conducted by Amerigo Marino, and with Jack Johnstone as guest director.
It is not my design to vituperate my deceased friend, Toby Dammit. He was a sad dog, it is true, and a dog's death it was that he died. But he himself was not to blame for his vices. They grew out of a personal defect in his mother. I recall a conversation I had with her when Toby was a mere babe in arms.
Duties to a well-regulated mind, Mr. Poe, are always pleasures. It is my duty, and therefore my pleasure, to see that as quickly as possible my son learns the difference between right and wrong.
But must you flog him so, Mrs. Dammit?
Babies like tough steaks are invariably the better for beating. It drives the evil propensities out.
But my dear woman, you have the misfortune to be left-handed.
I do not consider left-handedness a misfortune.
No, you fail to understand me. Madam, a child flogged left-handedly had better be left unflogged.
And deign to tell me why?
The world revolves from right to left. If each blow in the proper direction drives out an evil propensity, it follows that every thump in an opposite one knocks its quota of wickedness in.
That is a specious argument that does not warrant a reply, except perhaps this.
I was all too often present at Toby's chastisements, and even by the way he kicked, I could perceive that he was getting worse and worse every day. At last I saw, through tears in my eyes, that there was no hope for the villain at all, and one day when he had been cuffed until he grew black in the face, that no effect had been produced beyond that of making him wriggle himself into a fit, I could stand it no longer, but went down on my knees forthwith, and uplifting my voice, made a prophecy of his ruin. For the fact is that his precocity in vice was awful. At 5 months of age, he got into such passions that he was unable to articulate. At 6 months, I caught him gnawing at a pack of playing cards. At 7 months, he was in the constant habit of catching and kissing female babies. At 8 months, he peremptorily refused to put his signature to the temperance pledge.
No, no, no.
Thus he went on increasing in iniquity month after month, year after year, until in his youth...
Mama, it is my desire to wear mustaches. And furthermore, I'll bet I can grow them. By the bill, book and candle, by Job's comforter, I'll bet I can.
As you see, he had even contracted a propensity for cursing and swearing, and for backing his assertions with bets. Not that he actually laid wagers. No, I will do my friend the justice to say that he would as soon have laid eggs. With him, the thing was a mere formula, nothing more. You see, he was detestably poor, another vice which the physical deficiency in his mother had entailed upon him. And this was the reason, no doubt, that his expletive expressions about betting seldom took a pecuniary turn. It was usually, I'll bet you what you please, or I'll bet you what you dare, or I'll bet you a trifle, or else, more significantly still, I'll bet the devil my head. At all events, through this most ungentlemanly practice, the ruin which I predicted for Toby Dammit overtook him at last. for indeed the fashion had grown with his growth and strengthened with his strength, to the point that when he finally came to be a man, he could hardly utter a sentence without interlarding it with a proposition to gamble.
Devil me, Mr. Poe. It is and remains my contention that these United States shall serve as an arrow to the target of liberty. My wager on that, sir. I'll bet you what you please.
Toby, this habit of yours is an immoral one, and I feel constrained to tell you so.
Pish posh, Mr. Poe.
It is vulgar. I beg you to believe me.
Twaddle.
It is discountenanced by society. I say nothing but the truth.
Tush!
Gambling has been forbidden by an act of Congress.
I
entreat you, I implore you.
Utter foolishness.
Then, by heaven, I shall have to knock some sense into you.
That, sir, was a dastardly thing to do. Should you venture to try such an experiment again, I shall necessarily return in kind, and you will rue the result. I'll bet the devil my head you will.
Yes, there it was again. The quintessence of his abominable expressions. I'll bet the devil my head. But there was nothing more I could do. I quit the scene in desperation and in sorrow. However, I could not evade the fact that Mr. Toby Dammit's soul was in a perilous state. I resolved to bring all my eloquence into play to save it. I vowed to serve him as St. Patrick, in the Irish Chronicle, is said to have served the toad. That is to say, awaken him to a sense of his situation. So, I addressed myself to the task. I remonstrated with him, but to no purpose. I demonstrated in vain. I entreated. He smiled. I implored. He laughed. I preached. He sneered. I threatened. He swore. I pulled his nose. He blew it. And once again...
I'll bet the devil my head that taught you a lesson.
Toby, have you considered the gross impropriety of a man betting his brains like banknotes?
Should I?
You have adopted this mode of wager, I'll bet the devil my head, with a pertinacity and exclusiveness of devotion that displeases me no less than it surprises me. Now, the truth is...
I'll bet the devil my head I'm going to get another lecture from you.
The truth is, there is something in the air with which you are wont to give utterance to this offensive expression, something in your manner of enunciation which, for want of a more definite term, I must be permitted to call queer.
Oh?
It is your soul I am considering, Toby. Otherwise, you must believe this. I would not be speaking to you of these matters when I am so aware of your distaste for them. For some moments, he remained silent, merely looking me inquisitively in the face, but... presently, he threw his head to one side and elevated his eyebrows to a great extent. Then he spread out the palms of his hands and shrugged up his shoulders. Then he winked with the right eye. He repeated the operation with the left. Then he shut them both up very tight. Then he opened them both so very wide that I became seriously alarmed for the consequences. And applying his thumb to his nose, he made a disgusting, indescribable movement with the rest of his fingers. Finally, setting his arms akimbo, he condescended to reply.
Mr. Poe, I would be obliged to you if you would hold your tongue. I wish none of your advice. I despise your insinuations, equivocations, adumbrations. In short, sir, your entire peroration. I am of sufficient age to take care of myself. Or is it your misconception to consider me still an infant? Sir, do you mean to impugn my character? Is it your intention to insult me? Are you a fool, sir? Tell me, is your maternal parent aware of your absence from the domiciliary residence?
I beg you.
I put this question to you as a man of veracity, and I will bind myself to abide by your reply. I demand once more, does your mother know you're out? Your confusion betrays you. I'll bet the devil my head she does not. And so I bid you, Mr. Poe, good day.
He left my presence in quite undignified haste. It were well for him that he did so. My anger had been aroused. For once, I would have taken him up on his insulting wager, bet the devil my head indeed. And I would have won for Satan, Mr. Dammit's little head, because, you see, the fact is, my whereabouts was known by my mother. It was in the pursuance of my duty that I had been insulted, so I bore the insult like a man.
and it now seemed to me that I had done all that could be required of me in the case of this miserable individual. I resolved to trouble him no longer with my counsel, but to leave him to his conscience and himself. But I must confess that although I forbore to intrude with my advice, I could not quite bring myself to give up his society altogether. Worse, I even went so far as to humor some of his less reprehensible propensities, and there were times when I found myself lauding his wicked jokes, but with tears in my eyes, so profoundly did it grieve me to hear his evil talk.
Oh, by the great horned toad, Mr. Poe, your aptitude for companionship, without censure or reprimand, has taken a turn for the better. It puts me in mind of the gentleman from New York, Mr. Greeley, who importuned a man of tender years to seek the western shores, remember? Yet, to my knowledge, he never made the trek himself. Oh, yes. Unsought advice is like a woman left waiting at the church. Uncalled for.
Well, perhaps.
Zounds and hellions, sir. I'll bet the devil my head if you cannot agree on that.
Well, all right, Toby. Toby, what's to become of you?
Oh, your concern is, touching, Mr. Poe. But it smacks of your former attitude, and I shall have none of it. None, I say. Come, it's too fine a day to spend it on peradventure and mayhap pursuits. Let us stroll the roadside in the country lane, commune with nature in her pristine glory, seek the unfettered pleasures of the here and the now. Well, sir?
Very well, Toby.
And that sounds very much like Dawes Butler.
Yep, that is very strong doubt. You know what an amazing cast they had in this show, along with Dawes Butler and John Daner. You're looking at the director, William M. Robeson, who not only did most of the CBS Radio workshops, but so many suspenses, and trying to think of the other mystery escapes. He did. He produced a good deal of the escapes, and just so many radio shows that he was producer, sometimes producer director. They even had a guest director on this one, Jack Johnstone. Well, Jack Johnstone also did a lot of writing and directing, especially for a series that you and I both enjoy. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. He was the producer, the writer and director from 1955 to 1960 until they took it to the production from Hollywood to New York. And then he continued to write for the series, but he wasn't there to direct it. And the voice that caught my ear the earliest was the young version of that Dawes Butler is playing, and that was Dick Beals. I had to look it up. Dick Beals, who we all know better as the voice of Davy and Goliath, but he was also Speedy the Alka-Seltzer, a mascot type thing. And let me tell you, that guy was just about on every radio show, from Lone Ranger to Tales of Texas Ranger to Hallmark Hall of Fame, guest star, Gunsmoke. I remember several Gunsmokes, Rocky Fortune, Lux Radio Theater, Family Theater, Suspense, Fort Laramie, the Romance, CBS Radio Workshops. He did several of these. A bunch of suspenses, and back to Gunsmoke again. Continued to do voice acting after radio dried up. But, because I said, well, who is that guy? I said, okay, that's the voice of Davy and Goliath. I looked at him and found out he was also best known as the character Speedy for Alka-Seltzer. But we will find him all over the place on all these old radio programs that we play.
And we're having fun doing so today. This is a really good episode. I'm enjoying not only the great voice talents of John Daner and Dawes Butler and Mr. Beal, but a very good story, obviously, inspired by an Edgar Allan Poe story.
And it's so great to see, with all the things you think of with Poe, with the Raven and the Pit and the Pendulum and things like that, you don't think of some of the detective stories he penned, and you know, something like this. It's it gives you another side of the great Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, he's. I mean, there's a dark sense to the humor, but there is humor, which is unusual.
Yes.
For him.
At least to present it in his stories, right? Because all of his things are, so many of his things are dark. The Black Cat and even some of his poems that he wrote and sold to the newspapers. So, yeah, it gives you another dimension of Edgar Allan Poe.
Yep, and we're going to just go right ahead into part two here of CBS Radio Workshop. Never bet the devil your head. We'll be back in a little bit.
Thus it was that we strolled out together, arm in arm, our route leading us in the direction of a river.
Ah, there, Mr. Poe. You see, beyond the stream, that field of fluorescence. Would not the Roman goddess herself exclaim over its perfection?
It is beautiful.
Beautiful? By the sons of Saul, your words make a beggary of faultless grandeur. My friend, your jaundiced eye requires closer appraisal, and your stopped-up nose a clearer whiff.
But it's only a field of trees and flowers. I can see it very well from here.
Stuff and nonsense. If you possessed a wit of perspicacity, that same jaundiced eye would indicate a covered bridge within a stone's throw. We shall cross it, go beyond it, and wander lonely as a cloud, to steal a phrase from one of the English greats. Come now.
The bridge was roofed over by way of protection from the weather, and the archway, having but few windows, was thus uncomfortably dark and echoed resoundingly. As we entered the passage, the contrast between the external glare and the interior gloom struck heavily upon my spirits. Not so upon those of the happy dammit who offered to bet the devil his head that I was hipped. He seemed to be in unusual good humor. He was excessively lively, so much so that I entertained I know not what of uneasy suspicion. A certain species of austere Merry Andrewism seemed to beset my friend and caused him to make quite a tomfool of himself.
Edgar Allan Poe! Up here! On the railing. I'm a bird. I fly. Whee!
Nothing would serve him but wriggling and skipping about under and over everything that came in his way, now shouting out and now lisping out all manner of odd little and big words. I really could not make up my mind whether to kick him or to pity him.
And the Lumian Transcendentalism! Whee!
At length, having passed nearly across the bridge, we approached the termination of the footway when our progress was impeded by a turnstile of some height. Through this, I made my way quietly, but this turn would not serve the turn of Mr. Dammit.
Hold. This mechanism, Mr. Poe. Are we cattle to be impeded in this manner?
It's merely a turnstile. I passed through it without
it's
any...
merely a turnstile. Well, me, I defy it.
How can you defy an inanimate object?
By leaping over it. Not only shall I leap over it, but I shall perform a buck and wing at the apex of my jump.
Oh, but Toby, it's nearly 5 feet in height.
A bagatelle.
Oh, you're a braggadocio. You cannot do it, and you know you can't.
No? I'll bet the devil my head I can. You hear me? I'll bet the devil my head.
I was about to reply, notwithstanding my previous resolution, with some remonstrance against his impiety, when suddenly I heard, close at my elbow, a slight cough, which sounded very much like the ejaculation...
Ahem.
I started and looked about me in surprise. My glance, at length, fell into a nook in the framework of the bridge, and there, upon the figure of a little old gentleman of, shall we say, venerable aspect, yes, and of reverend appearance, for he not only had on a full suit of black, but his shirt was perfectly clean,
and the collar turned very neatly down over a white cravat, while his hair was parted in front like a girl's. His hands were clasped pensively together over his stomach, and his two eyes were carefully rolled up into the top of his head. Upon observing him more closely, I perceived that he wore a black silk apron over his small clothes, and this was a thing which I thought very odd. Before I had time to make any remark, however, upon so singular a circumstance, he interrupted me. To this second observation, I was not immediately prepared to reply. The fact is, remarks of this laconic nature are nearly unanswerable. I am not ashamed to say, therefore, that I turned to Mr. Toby Dammit for assistance. Dammit, what are you about? Don't you hear? The gentleman says, ahem. I looked sternly at my friend while I thus addressed him, for, to say the truth, I felt particularly puzzled. And when a man is particularly puzzled, he must knit his brows and look savage, else he looks like a fool. Toby! Damn it! Although this sounded very much like an oath, believe me, nothing was further from my thoughts. Damn it! The gentleman says ahem! I do not attempt to defend my remark on the score of profundity. I did not think it profound myself, but I have noticed that the effect of our speeches is not always proportionate to their importance in our own eyes. But if I had knocked Toby on the head with the turnstile itself, he could hardly have been more discomfited than when I addressed him with those simple words.
You don't say so. Are you quite sure he said that? Well, at all events, I'm for it now, and may as well put a bold face upon the matter. Here goes, then. Ahem! Ahem! Ahem!
Strangely, the little old gentleman seemed pleased. God only knows why. He left his station at the nook of the bridge, came forward with a gracious air, took Dammit by the hand, and shook it cordially, looking all the while straight up in his face with an air of the most unadulterated benignity it is possible for the mind of man to imagine. Finally, he spoke.
Well, well, Toby Dammit.
That's right, good sir. And what think you of my assertion and my wager?
That you can leap the turnstile?
Correct you are, and perform with consummate skill a buck and wing at the apex of my leap.
I am quite sure you will win your wager, Dammit, but we are obliged to have a trial, you know, for the sake of mere form.
Ahem. A trial, you say? Ahem.
My friend took off his coat with a deep sigh and tied a pocket handkerchief around his waist. He produced an unaccountable alteration in his countenance by twisting up his eyes and bringing down the corners of his mouth. I did not express myself aloud, but I thought this is quite a remarkable silence on the part of Toby Dammit, and is no doubt a consequence of his verbosity upon a previous occasion. I wonder if he has forgotten the many unanswerable questions which he propounded to me so fluently on the day when I gave him my last lecture.
Ahem!
The old gentleman now took him by the arm and led him more into the shade of the bridge, a few paces back from the turnstile.
My good fellow, I make it a point of conscience to allow you this much run. Wait here till I take my place by the stile, so that I may see whether you go over it handsomely and don't omit any flourishes of the buck and wing. A mere form, you know. I will say, one, two, three, and away! And mind you start at the word away.
The little gentleman stood there a moment, looking quietly at Toby as though appraising him. Then he turned, walked away, and took his position by the stile. Again he paused a moment, as if in profound reflection, then looked up and smiled very slightly, tightened the strings of his apron, and took a long, long look at Dammit. I thought to myself, what right has the old gentleman to make any other gentleman jump? Who is he? If he asks me to jump, I won't do it, and that's flat, and I don't care who the devil he is. The devil he... But what I said, or what I thought, or what I heard, occupied only an instant. The black-suited little man gave the word as agreed upon.
One, two, three, and away!
I saw Toby run nimbly and spring grandly from the floor of the bridge, cutting the most awful flourishes with his legs as he went up. I saw him high in the air, buck and winging it to admiration. I thought it a singular thing that he did not continue to go over. But the whole leap was the affair of a moment. And before I had a chance to make any profound reflection, down came Mr. Dammit on the flat of his back, on the same side of the stile from which he had started. At the same instant, I saw the old gentleman running off at the top of his speed. But ere leaving us, he had caught and wrapped up in his apron something that fell heavily into it from the darkness of the arch just over the turnstile. At all this, I was much astonished, but I had no leisure to think, for Mr. Dammit lay particularly still, and I concluded that his feelings had been hurt and that he stood in need of my assistance. I hurried up to him and found that he had received what might be termed a serious injury. Quite serious. Quickly, I threw open an adjacent window of the bridge, and the sad truth flashed upon me. About 5 feet above the top of the turnstile, there extended a flat iron bar that served to strengthen the structure. With the edge of this brace, it appeared evident, the neck of my unfortunate friend had come precisely in contact. And alas, the truth is, he had been deprived of his head. He did not long survive his terrible loss. Despite the efforts of the physicians, he grew worse and, at length, died. So I bedewed his grave with my tears, worked a bar sinister on his family escutcheon, and assumed the general expenses of his modest funeral. Exit Toby Dammit. Toby Dammit, a lesson to all riotous livers, and proof absolute of my initial assertion that every tale should have, must have, does have, a moral.
You have just heard John Daner in the CBS Radio Workshop's production of Never Bet the Devil Your Head, under the guest direction of Jack Johnstone. It was adapted for radio by Alan Botzer, with music composed and conducted by Amerigo Marino. Heard in the supporting cast were Eleanor Audley, Leon Ledoux, Dawes Butler, Richard Beals, and Howard McNear. Next week, from New York, the workshop will present The Heart of Man, a dramatization of a surgical operation in which the heart itself is the principal actor. Hugh Douglas speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
To come out of a beheading.
It is. Amerigo Marino, he was the music supervisor on that. He also scored most of the Johnny Dollars from the mid-50s up to at least the same ones that Jack Johnstone worked on there. So we know his music from some of the suspense and things that he did for that. So tremendous. Yeah, it's just not, well, certainly not what you expect out of a beheading. You expect like a drum roll or something like that, right?
How pleasant. Meanwhile, the devil scampered off with dude's head.
Yeah, and he didn't live too much longer with that. I wouldn't think so.
And I also found it. Oh, yep, sorry. But I also did find it ironic that James Daner felt that every story should have a moral. Ergo, Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Always with a poet. apologies to Gar. Yes, you should never bet the devil your head. Never, never bet the devil your soul. If you must bet the devil something, bet him a box of milk duds. That way, everyone's a winner.
There you go. I like that.
There you go. Since we have a moral to the story that has a moral, it makes it a very moral story, I guess.
Yeah.
I love the character.
And
name.
And
his last name was Damn It. I love that.
I know. Also, more irony, or was it? But for the record book, I believe that is the first moral that featured milk duds.
I think it may. I may have broken some new ground there. The milk dud moral.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. We could do a whole show on all the candies from the movie theaters and all the snacks and things at the various places.
Yeah, we could.
It's always different at the drive-in.
Well, drive-in had so many great things. You know, drive-in always had better selection than of foods. They may have had better selection of candies at the theater, but the drive-ins, it seems like you could get just about anything.
Yeah, they had hamburgers, they had hot dogs, they had, other things. Like you said, maybe the theaters had more of the overpriced box large candies, but for straight-up food, the drive-ins were king, especially back in the day.
Yeah.
They had a working grill.
So many things the devil's been involved in the media. You know, and movies and television and music.
I thought you were going to start talking politics. The devil in the media. Never mind.
You know what's funny is, you know, you mentioned that in that one Kolchak where really was a devil worshiper and invited. He was a politician who invited Carl to be his press agent or something, which Carl didn't go for. I put his life in peril, of course, but so many things. I mean, Twilight Zone, multiple times, the devil either came into play or was actually there. When you think of the David Wayne story, when he makes the deal that he was a hypochondriac who then couldn't die until he said he wanted it, and he accidentally killed his wife when he was trying to kill himself, which of course he couldn't die. And instead of sentencing him to death or the electric chair, they gave him life in prison. Great Rod Serling. But the Howling Man, like you said, the last night, the nick of time where the devil's head was the fortune teller that kept people in that little town of what, Circleville, Ohio? Was that the town it was?
Yes.
So those are just a few, and that's just right on Twilight Zone. So Rod was not beyond using the devil to get people to hopefully, you know, sit up and fly straight type thing. Most recent one has been a series of Lucifer on Fox.
Yeah.
And where the devil got tired of being Lucifer got tired of the family business, so he came up to Earth and had his fun up here, but also helped solve mysteries, murders, and things like that.
Yes, in fact, there's this guy on Twitter who has a gag account, and he's Satan. It's so funny. He just posted this month, "How dare they cancel a show about me?"
Yeah, they did. They that doesn't mean the devil won't be there anymore. It just won't be there on that show.
This guy's funny as heck. He tweets as if he's the devil.
Wow. You know, there's a lot of so many other shows too. I mean, I'm just looking over some shows where the devil was there. Fantasy Island, Highway to Heaven, Battlestar Galactica, Northern Exposure, Touched by an Angel, Stargate SG-1, the Powder Puff Girls. I thought that was just murder to watch. Doctor Who, Fallen, Supernatural, Torchwood, Ashes to Ashes, Being Human, Rick and Morty, The Messengers, The Vampire Diaries, and currently running on, I don't know where it's running, it says Salem, and Oliver Bell plays, Samuel is the character's name, but I guess it's The Devil Makes Pacts with Witches in exchange for diabolical power is the premise of that. So, and I can think of one Broadway musical where the devil was prominent. The Damn Yankees.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. Where a guy kind of sold his soul. And, of course, the devil was played in that on Broadway and in the movie version by Ray Walston, who was better known to all of us as Uncle Martin on My Favorite Martian.
I had a dream once about the devil. I was making a deal. I was making a deal with him. And I said, really, you'll give me anything I want, anything I want, and all you want is my shoe. He said, well, just the bottom part of it.
Bottom part of your shoe.
It's the bottom part of my
shoe. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
Make me think there on the Saturday.
And with that, hello, Vorpal Byte and guest 429. Thanks for joining us live in the chat.
Wonderful story here. Movies. What movies do you remember the devil being prominent?
Well, there's that horrible Christmas Mexican movie, of course, that's in the public domain, and a lot of our horror hosts have used at the holiday season. But one of my favorites that comes to mind is The Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino and Keanu Reeves.
A terrible terrible Bill Cosby movie, The Devil and Max Devlin. I remember that.
Yes,
Old God Book 3, where George Burns played both God and the devil in that one. trying to think here. We've got you look at Rosemary's Baby. And
The Omen.
The Omen, right, where the gal was possessed.
Exorcist, how can you forget?
No, and I didn't realize in the original Heaven Can Wait, which starred Don Ameche, it was about, when the playboy Henry Van Cleve goes to hell, he makes a deal to come back to Earth, which they also remade to an even longer film, The Heaven Can Wait with Warren Beatty.
Yes.
That's another film that lost money. Oh, man.
One of the most sinister, demonic, devilish-looking characters I can recall in the movies is the 1985 film Legend with Tom Cruise and Tim Curry, who seems to be a king of creepiness, plays Darkness. And very much as we imagine the devil with giant horns, he's all red, very satanic looking. Probably one of film's most epic visualizations of a demonic or devil character.
Tim Curry is
the devil. Portray him as exactly that way, but boy, if he doesn't look like what many people might imagine the devil looks like, I don't know what does.
Tim Curry is just one amazing actor. He can either be completely horrid and terrible, or he can be just absolutely roaringly funny, like he was in the movie Clue. And like it was in the movie Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, and things like that. I mean, just what a wild range he and John Lithgow, you know, have. That they can do the heaviest of heavy and evilest of evil and turn around and do comedy in the next breath.
and accomplished kind of a stage actor, too. Look at the character he played in, naturally, the long-running Rocky Horror Picture Show. But he also had a rock hit in the late 70s called I Do the Rock, and it was kind of a spoof of world events at the time. It was a really good song from that period.
I did not.
It almost sounded like something Warren Zevon would have made.
Huh. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Joe is so educational.
Hey, every once in a while, I usually learn stuff from you, but I like to throw things out there from the large collection of crap that lives inside my head.
I know the feeling. In 1957, Vincent Price played Mr. Scratch. He is opposite the Spirit Man, and that was in the movie, The Story of Mankind. There was also, what was it? Was it the devil? The devil that during the Norman Corwin story about the where they put Santa Claus on trial? Is that what it was? Anyway, Vincent Price played one of the lawyers in that amazing production. So,
and how about this? Perhaps the most frightening visage of Satan or the devil from our childhoods, and that's from the Sorcerer's Apprentice scene from Fantasia.
Yeah.
There
absolutely.
Was one dark, sinister thing, especially for young children to see. Pretty darn frightening.
Yes.
But a great representation of maybe you want to stay away from doing bad things, kind of a character.
Well, and don't you think that's why the devil is so prominent in family stories and things like that? Purple Bite said Miracle on 42nd Street, ? Really?
Yes.
But
as sinister and as frightening as the devil can be, we poke fun at him, too. You know, it, maybe it's just like whistling in the dark, but we poke fun at the devil. And who better to help poke fun at the devil is someone who's a little red himself.
Little Red Skelton from 1951. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, let's wrap up. We played part one yesterday of the junior character, the mean widow kid that Red Skelton plays so well. He actually captures the devil and locks him in a closet, and it changes the entire world. Everyone's nice to each other. So let's see what happens now with Junior Cuff the Devil.
I don't know if you know it or heard about it, but I caught the devil 3 weeks ago. I tricked him, and now everybody in the world is good, you know. You know, I used to do things not to be bad, but just because to get a little attention. Now, like the time I came running in from playing out in a big open field, you know.
Now, what have I told you about slamming the door?
Look.
What's all the excitement?
I was out playing, and I found a whole lot of milk bottles. Milk bottles.
Well, what's that to get excited about?
Well, wouldn't you be excited if you found a cow's nest?
Oh, I'll be glad when you go to school.
Yeah, me too. Pop catching up with me.
Well, go wash.
Ain't you going to kiss me?
I said go wash.
See what I mean? They just didn't love me. In fact, sometimes my mummy would look at me, then get up and walk over to me pop and punch him right in the nose. I know what I will do. I'm going to get a little affection around here. I'm going to wash me hands. I'll turn on this hot faucet. Hey, Dotie.
Oh, I scalded my fingers. I scalded my fingers.
How could you? There's no hot water.
I froze me fingers.
Junior, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. At times, I believe you're one of the devil's helpers.
The devil's helpers?
Yes.
Now, that's what she was always saying to me. You is one of the devil's helpers. So I said to myself, if I is one of his helpers, how come I never see him? had on a red suit, a pitchfork, and a tail, and he told me that he could only lose his wicked power if someone outsmarted him. Well, I told him I wanted to go with him. He went in the closet to get my suitcase, and I slammed the door. Come here, I'm going to let you talk to him. Come here, come here. Hey, you red demon, are you still in there?
Yes, but mark my word, wise one.
You dance, huh?
I will trick you. All my name is not Satan.
The devil, you say.
Tell me, friend, how long do you intend to keep me in here?
Oh, I don't know. Let's put it this way. Here's a pair of ice skates. Now, you take it from there. Until it squeezes over, boy.
Junior?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, little boy. I thought you were Junior.
It's me? Since I captured the old devil, I've been voicing regular, you know. Tied and warmed, you know.
Yes, I know. You've been such a good boy that I haven't had to thank you for 3 weeks.
All of me calluses are gone. Pop hasn't spanked me either, but I will admit it, it's kind of bored. You
oh,
know,
really?
Yes, when I'm not good enough.
Well, Junior, tell me.
For myself.
Would you like a little brother or sister to play with?
Well, if it's all the same to you, I'd just soon have the pony.
Tell me, is the devil still in the closet?
Yeah, he's still here.
Junior, my dear friend.
Listen to him,
if you will open the door, I'll see that you get the finest pony that ever pranced on four hooves.
A black and white one?
Yes.
With a silver saddle?
Yes.
With a hop-along chastity suit?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm a Roy Rogers fan. Boy, you out of business, boy.
Well, if I'm going out of business, maybe you would sell the tools I've been working with.
What tools?
Hatred, envy, deceit.
Nope, nope, nope.
They can be sold. The price is very low.
Not interested, kiddo, not interested. You.
Look, here is my prize implement. Very few know about it.
Let me see it.
All right. Open the door.
Okay, I'm going to see what the devil... Oh, no, boy. I'm not opening that door. You describe it to me.
Very well. It's a wedge-shaped tool. White wall. Mm-hmm. It's called discouragement.
Discouragement?
I peddled it at a very high price.
Oh, why do you sell for so much?
Because it's more useful to me than any other of my tools.
You sell?
And now that you've stepped into my shoes, you should know about it.
Oh?
I can pry open and get inside man's consciousness with it.
Oh, it can.
I use this on nearly everybody.
You tell.
Very few people realize it belongs to me. Very few realize it belongs to me.
Well, let's not get sickening about it.
You little brat, let me out of here.
Me?
Or mark my word, my helpers will come to my rescue.
Ah.
Why did I allow myself to be tricked?
Why, he sounds like he's crying.
Well, I'm not going to open that door to find out. Hey, devil, are you sad?
Yes. So sad. So awfully sad.
Now, I know I got the devil in that closet because even his acting is bad.
Folks, there's no use dragging this out. You know why we're here at Junior's house. To take a vote on whether the devil should go free.
Yeah, and I say keep him locked up. That's what I say. Keep him locked up.
Has it affected your life, Mr. Lumpum?
It certainly has. I've been grounded for 3 weeks. All I know is that, Since that evil force has been closed in on, I suddenly realize when you sober up, you got to face the same problems, you see.
Just a minute. I bumped into you coming out of a bar only last night.
Oh, was you the lady who was in such a hurry to get in there?
What were you doing there?
I was saying hello to a few friends of mine. Oh, I may have taken a pretzel or two, but... I went in and some of those guys think of keeping the devil locked up is sort of idiotic, you see.
Willie, as a friend, did you have a drink?
Well, I'm tapering off, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm nothing but Airwick now. heavy garlic eater, you know. I had a Willie Lump Lump special.
What was that?
That's 2 ice cubes and a glass of hot water diluted with an 8-ounce glass of cold water. Well, there's a lot of nothing, huh?
I think you should keep that devil locked up. I'll tell you why. You see, I'm an atomic research worker, and all the time there were spies, nothing but spies. But now they've disappeared. Do you know what happened to me just the other day over at Joe's place? I went in there. Service, how about a little service here?
Please, Willie, please.
Well, I want some service.
What do you want?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know? I don't tell anybody anything. There's too many spies around.
What's the trouble, Joe?
I want some service. That's what I want.
Okay, take it easy. Willie, what are you doing back? You just walked out of here a couple of minutes ago after you ate a 7-course dinner.
Mm.
Now what do you want?
A toothpick.
Toothpicks don't come with our blue plate
Look,
special.
I want a toothpick. The steak you served me, I stuck in one of my cavities up here.
Our steaks aren't that small.
Oh, no, I got news for you, fat boy.
Yeah.
A fly lit on my steak and he had to balance himself with 1 foot. Now, how about a little nip? How about a little nip?
You've had too much.
Oh, no, no, I can tell when I've had too much.
How?
Well, you see these 2 corks in my ears?
Yeah.
Well, when they pop out, oh, now I have to put them back in and start all over.
I think you've had enough.
No, you think I had enough. You think I had enough. You sound like my wife.
Is that what she says?
That's what she always says just before she passes out. You see, give me a little nip, will you? I'm an atomic research worker, and I have to be alert.
Huh? You say you're an atomic research worker?
Yeah. I'm the best little research worker. I locate uranium.
Give him another drink. This may be our chance to find out something. Hey, you feel like another one?
Oh, boy, what a head I got. Inside my head, there's a little man keep pounding with a hammer. Oh, 5 o'clock. Thank goodness he's a union man. He'll stop now. You know, I just got back from Alaska.
Alaska?
Alaska.
I'll bet it was cold up there.
Cold? My water spaniel's cubed up on me.
Well, tell me, what were you doing in Alaska?
Nothing. That's where I get my mail.
You're
not getting anything out of me, boy.
Maybe you could tell me something.
What's this?
You know where the Pacific Fleet is?
I most certainly do.
Where is it?
In the water.
Oh, a wise guy, huh? Here, have another drink.
Oh, I can't drink anymore, but it's a shame to waste it. Just pour it over me.
Say, big boy, why do you drink so much?
It's anyway? On account of my asthma.
But drinking is bad for asthma.
Listen, if it's good enough for me, it's good enough for asthma.
So you say you're a government atomic research worker?
That's right. I travel all over the world.
Where do you go from here?
A special mission, the largest deposit of uranium in the world.
Where are you going?
I can't tell you. It's a secret. But, boy, am I going to have fun riding in that kangaroo's pockets.
When are you going to Australia?
How did that get out? Look, you're pretty nosy, boy. I figured I was going to have trouble with you when I came in here. Because you just don't look right to me, boy. You just don't look right. I've seen a lot of people in my day, but you just don't look right to me. I can hardly see you.
Look. You better stop drinking or you won't be able to drive your car.
You better start reading them lines quicker or we ain't going to be here next week. What car? I don't drive a car. I got a green elephant parked outside. I'm going to learn to ride an elephant, so when I get to Egypt, I'll know how to ride. You see, I'm going on the next troop ship.
A troop ship?
Yeah.
When?
Oh, no. I ain't going to get it out of me. My tongue ain't that loose yet.
About that troop movement, do you think you could remember if you had another drink?
Oh, it could be.
Okay. Here you are.
Oh, just throw it in my face. I'll drink it slowly.
Now, when is that boat sailing?
Well, I can't remember. Here, call this number and make out like you're me and ask them, please.
Mm-hmm. Well, swell. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Hello? St. John's Hospital, psychopathic ward.
You know I get more free drinks this way. Thanks, boy. That's why I say don't let that devil out
now
of the
Now, wait
court.
Just a minute there, bud. I represent the ladies of the La Brea Tar Pit Society, and I say let him out.
No.
Yes, it's unconstitutional to hold someone against his will.
Thank you, friend.
Quiet. That devil's going to speak now.
If the little boy lets me out, I will promise not to tempt anyone ever again. I have removed my horn and long tail. I have no power anymore.
You really lose your horns and your tail?
Yes, and you may have them to hang in your clubhouse as a reminder to do good.
Okay, now, if you give them to me, oh boy, wait till the gang sees you.
Now, crime and destruction are on the march again.
Well, you promised that you wouldn't do nothing.
You fool, you! Never trust an evil force.
Well, there he goes. I hope you busybodies and you're all happy. You're suckers. That's what you is.
Why do you call us suckers?
Haven't you heard? I called them the way I see them again.
And so, fortunately or unfortunately, the devil is free to go run around and be the devil.
And luckily, they didn't describe what he was wearing coming out of that closet, so.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, my.
It's been a very interesting, fun weekend to be able to present the stories about the devil. Look forward to another weekend. This has been really fun.
Yeah, thanks to Gar, we have an unlimited supply of
we can do one show a month. Next week we're looking forward to taking the weekend hostage, and we'll have a special guest next week. As well, somebody who wrote a story that I got to produce. So that'll be a lot of fun for people to show up and hear his program, along with our very first Gunsmoke that we're presenting on this on Erie House Radio.
That's right. For the first time, Gunsmoke.
And of course, you'll have your William Conrad and Parley Bear and. And John Daner is on every week in a different role. Sometimes he's the good guy that lives there. Sometimes he's the bad guy that's going through town. He's a gunslinger. He's a farmer. He's a cattleman. He's every man in that show except Matt Dillon.
Except Matt Dillon.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. So it's all about hostages next weekend there.
Yeah, so that means I'll be broadcasting live from my basement with my collection of. Disappeared. Never mind the screams you hear in the background. That's nothing to be concerned with.
An old record you got playing there, right? In the background, yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
that's the best thing about being a horror fan.
You can get away with so much.
I was just going to say, I've never dreamed of having a conversation with a devil myself. I've met him a few times in the bottle, but other than that, no.
Yes.
Nothing.
He's usually near the bottom, isn't he?
He is. You know, and the problem is working your way to the bottom to get to them, you know.
Oh, that could be fun.
It's amazing how many things seem like a good idea after you've had several things to drink. Even when they're not a good idea.
I'm looking at these tweets from the Satan guy I mentioned earlier. He's just so darn funny. And it seems like every Friday he posts, don't forget to sin this weekend.
I like that guy.
Oh, he's funny. Ladies, you have $5 to build the perfect man, and then he gives a price list. Tall, $300. Smart, $200. Rich, $400. has horns, $2, is red, $3, attractive, $500. We have $5 to work with. Once in a while, he has a war with someone else who tweets as God. That's funny. Oh, here's a good one. LOL actually means Lucifer our Lord. So instead of laughing at stuff, you're actually been hailing me, so I'll see you all down here.
Oh, shoot. That's funny.
The only reason I still visit heaven is because all the dogs are there.
Well, that was in the Twilight Zone.
That's true.
Movie. Yes.
Yes, it was.
One of your favorites. Uh-huh.
It would have been funny if he would have added, but gee, there's plenty of cats here.
Cats can be evil. They get their revenge.
They can. They can, but there are no evil dogs.
That's
because
true.
Just like the movie, all dogs go to heaven. They do. They have good hearts,
you know,
good souls.
Remind me, talking about the cats, there's this family in Texas that got in trouble because they found some abandoned cats, and they took them home with them. This was recently in the USA Today, only to get severely hurt by these cats because these cats were actually baby bobcats. And now not only did they get very, very scratched up and hurt by these bobcats, now the wildlife, the federal wildlife is after them for taking wild animals into their homes.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Here's another tweet from Satan. Isn't it funny how I'm seen as the bad guy, yet I punish bad people and was the first one to demand equal rights?
This guy.
This guy's funny. Let's see. Yes, it hurt when I fell from heaven. Come to hell. It's where all the fun people are.
I always say that's where I'm going. That's where all my friends will be.
Yes. There's that one joke. In life, there's only two things you have to think about. Whether you're healthy or whether you're sick. If you're healthy, you have nothing to worry about. If you're sick, you only have two things to worry about, if you're going to live or if you're going to die. If you live, you have nothing to worry about. If you die, you only have two things to worry about, whether you go to heaven or to hell. If you go to heaven, you have nothing to worry about. And if you go to hell, you'll be so busy shaking hands with friends, you won't have time to be worried.
There you go. That's very simplifies it all for all of us. Always reminds me of the story when something went wrong between the devil and God, and God says, "Will you give him back, or I'll sue you?" And the devil laughs out, "Where are you going to get a lawyer?" You know?
Yeah, I got all the lawyers. Don't be a racist. Hate everyone equally. That's Satan.
Oh my.
Trump being president means I'm no longer the most evil leader in the history. Oh, gosh, stop it. Roses are red, violets are blue. You're going to hell. I'm coming for you.
Ooh.
Roses are red, violets are red. Everything's red. You're in hell. Satan's on a roll.
I actually I've used the devil in three of my different movie shows. I used him once when we went to the Devil Strip Dollies and we hosted the movie The Devil's Cargo, and then once when we did our 50th show, and Al came in as the devil so that he was mad because I hadn't put him in more shows, so he had everybody cheat me out of my place in line at the return line there at the store. And then he was in, the third one? We did Half a Sinner, and Mike Mace and I ended up in hell, and we had to trick the devil to get back home. So.
Great.
So.
That's great. I can see Al playing the devil. Oh, and I meant to, and the reason why is, of course, the upcoming Captain Zero. And by the way, I meant to mention how dashing you look in a goatee.
In a goatee that keeps falling off, yeah. It's a matter of fact, the mustache in the first set wouldn't stay at all, so we end up drawing it on with a dry marker. And the second
That's
shoot,
great.
Mine stayed on pretty much, and Al's wouldn't. And so that we had to draw his on for the second part of it, and only know what's going to happen. We're going into, I think, April 11th to finish off the segments, and that's the costumes then as well. And we'll
coming to Erie House Television soon, by the way.
Yeah, you've got the first 10 episodes there waiting for you to when Livestream figures out how to work again.
Yes. Yeah, I've been talking to their technicians, and they're like, what? Oh, please.
like they don't know.
Telling me this, too. Stuff is up. Well, what kind of file are you using? The same one everybody else who's complaining is.
Yeah.
Please help us. Make this toy work again. Because it's fun. And I had hoped, you know, there's so many, there are a few good devil-related movies that we could have ran this weekend. The Devil's Messenger, The Devil's Hand, The Devil's Partner.
Yeah. Well, and The Devil's Messenger was a combination of three stories from Lon Chaney Jr.'s 1313 Demon Street. And I don't think that, was that from here? 1313 Demon Street? It was a very short-run series.
Yeah, it was run for television, and what, they crammed three of them together to put the movie length feature together.
Yeah, and the movie length feature.
Or maybe they were half hour stories.
Yeah, it's such a better copy than any of the episodes that are floating around. That Devil's Messenger.
Yeah.
I always thought that maybe we'd do that one by going to a messenger service or something like that. Singing telegrams or something like that to host it from a place like that, you know.
Mhm.
But
and we've been damned with an extra maybe 7 minutes of time here, so if you'd like to call in real quick, 646-378-0264 and spin the wheel of radio.
That'll
we got
be
time
you
for
you're out there in the... Oh, the Warple Blight isn't, I was going to say. Warple Blight could call in, but he can't because he's not listening now.
Yes, he was with us before, but duty calls, I imagine. Go ahead, Dave. Give it a spin. We got time
well,
for
another...
Well,
let me give it a walk right up to the wheel here and give it a big spin.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Oh, thought we were going to get Betty Hutton and Frank. Nope, it's Bob and Ray.
Now, El Gucco Productions presents the exciting tales of Robin Hood of Sherman Forest. Today's Robin Hood adventure is entitled Lord Nottington's Dastardly Trap. As we look in on Robin Hood's gay yet serious band of gamey outlaws, we find them in their hideout in Sherman Forest. Robin is in his tent, counting the day's take.
Three for me, one for the poor. Three for me, one for the poor.
Hello, Robin. How's it going?
Fine, little Irving. Three for me, one for the poor.
Well, don't you think you're giving too much to the poor, Robin?
I think you're right. Six for us, one for the poor. Six for us.
Oh, Robin. It's me, the Fair Maid Marilyn.
How goes it, Fair Lady Marilyn?
Wonderful, Robin. I just came from Nottington. Do you know it was announced today that at the Harvest Moon Festival tomorrow, there would be an archery contest, and the best bowman in the country would be awarded 100 gold crowns by Lord Nottington.
By Jove, 100 gold crowns is a lot of money.
It surely is, Robin.
Well, why don't you enter, Robin? You could use that kind of loot.
Yeah, it would be a splendid idea. Because it isn't stealing, I wouldn't have to give any of it to the poor. But, alas, I just remembered something. The string on my bow is broken.
I'll mend it for you, Robin.
Say, wait a minute, Governor. What if it's a trap? Lord Nottingham would like to get his hands on you, and he probably figures you'll try to collect those gold crowns.
I'll bet a tinker's dozen you're right, little Irving.
Why don't you enter the contest wearing the disguise of a serf they don't know, Robin?
I have a better idea to foil Lord Nottingham's trap.
What is it, Governor?
Yes, Robin, what is it?
I shan't go.
And so Robin Hood narrowly escapes with his life as he again outwits Lord Nottingham. But tune in next time when Robin Hood will once more rob the rich and welch on the poor. And you'll hear him say to his men,
"Whole bunch of you are the sloppiest eaters I've ever seen."
On Robin Hood of Sherman Forest.
Sloppy eaters, especially that Friar Tuck, I'll bet.
Rob from the rich and welch on the poor. I love that.
Welch on the poor. Sounds like the government. talk about the devil. Oy. Hey,
yeah.
We're going to have a devilishly good time here on Erie House Television. Later tonight at 8:30, we've got Arachna of the Spider People from Beware Theater hosting Phantom from 10,000 Leagues. And then at 10 o'clock, Weirdo Rama is back with Victor Von Psychotron and War of the Robots. That's your horror hosting pleasures tonight on Erie House Television.
Yeah, and I know we're Monday night on Vortex. Mike Mace and I will be on the channel hosting, I know, a movie you've never heard of before, Phantom from 10,000 Leagues.
Deja vu all over again.
We hosted it from Sea Cave in Akron. At one point, I took a picture of the fish tank, and then one segment we actually hosted from inside the fish tank. So that was a lot of fun.
That sounds cool.
So.
You have a knack for theming up your locations with your movies.
Try to when we can. It just keeps it fresh. It always makes it challenging, you know, to make you want to keep going because, okay, what can you match with this? The sad thing is when you find a perfect match and they won't let you come in and film.
There's
a store up here called the Seven Grains, and I just can't even talk to the manager. Everybody, all the employees, protector, I just wanted to come in and film it because there's a movie tomorrow at 7. And there were two places, Tomorrow's Treasures and the Seven Grains, and neither one would let me go in and film. Really? Should have had you get on. That way I would have got in. Now you get into all those places.
That was dumb luck. I still am amazed that I was allowed to shoot over at the Natural History Museum, and that was such a fun show to put together with help from Matt Skelly. That was a lot of fun. A lot of good green screening, a lot of dinosaur facts, and a great movie, The Lost World.
It was a really, really cool show. When you show that again on Erie House, we have to make sure we promote that properly, because I tell you what, that's just a great way to spend some time with a fantastic silent movie, which you completely rescored on top of everything else.
I did. I found some great music that was royalty-free, and it just seemed to fit. I get lucky with that sometimes, even when I'm doing the crazy sound bites in the movies and stuff. Little music pieces just seem to fall in place sometimes. I don't know how that's happening for me. They seem to work well with the action of the film, and it's fun to do. Sometimes I like the post production more than the production. If you get my drift.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes it's a far tougher curve, but you get to see neater things with it. So that's where the magic happens.
And lots of magic here. We really do appreciate our listeners coming in to the archives and listening later on, and those of you that have enjoyed the show with us live. It's just a whole lot of fun for us to bring you these old-time shows and share them with you. Whether you've heard them before or not, it's fun to share them together this way. And we'll see. And we'll be hanged if you won't have a good time next weekend.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Yeah, thanks for that wonderful clockwork there, Blog Talk. Appreciate it.
Well, I shut up when I did. We needed to close it off. You got cut off about halfway through his speech there.
What are you going to do?
It makes you wonder why they bothered to have the clock. What we found out, you know what, I think that's funny, what we found out yesterday is you and I are looking at the exact same clock, and we're getting different readings.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the phone is the phone, and that's what people are hearing when we call in or the listeners call in, and that's all live and what have you. But I think it depends on your connection speed, too. It seems sometimes when I use the laptop, the counter is more synced up to real time than my desktop, of all things. Weird.
Well, your desktop is faster than your laptop.
I would think it would be. It's certainly... it certainly has the specs to be faster, but no, for some reason, when I do it from the laptop, which usually is only out of necessity, it's very clunky and hard to use, but what are you going to do? Technology.
Yep. You got to love it and hate it at the same time. Good old technologically there.
Yep, and as we've pointed out many, many times in some of these cautionary science fiction tales, you wonder if we're mature enough as a species to have advanced and have the ability to do a lot of good, and we do, but we have the ability to do a lot of bad, and we do that too.
Yeah, and anything, even if it's created for good, sometimes so many times it still ends up being used for something that's not so good.
Mm-hmm. Or we use things thoughtlessly without understanding them, and then they tend to dominate your life. Look at how frustrated people get when there's an electricity outage. There's no television, there's no computer, and they don't know what to do with themselves.
Well, I give up and go to bed. I can't do anything. There's no internet. My phone can only just last this so long before it eats up my data. I'm going to bed.
If there's a lantern, there's always a good book. There's always a good book to curl up with. It depends. If it's dark, if it's nighttime, yeah, I'll go to sleep. But if there's power out, I'm wide awake. I've got this. I'll find a book. I'll clean something. I'm here. Well, folks.
Oh, there I am. I was back.
Hey, you weren't gone. I heard you.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear anything, and I heard a bunch of interference. I couldn't hear anything, so I took the speaker off, and then I couldn't hear anything. And here I am.
Ah.
For what that's worth.
That must have been just your receiver, because you were speaking just fine, very audible.
Oh, okay. So I was just hearing things. Is that what you're saying? These other voices in my head. They tell me to do bad things sometimes.
You know, that's one of his best performances, and I have not seen the movie in its entirety, is Mad Love. I've got to see Mad Love. I've got to get a copy of it. I don't own it.
No, I haven't seen
it. Because it's one of his greatest insane roles, you know, where he has one of his classic meltdowns. Plus that crazy hardware he wears in it too.
Okay.
A a glove and like a neck brace thing, and he's quite demented in the film. There's a wonderful video out there. Sometimes we play it on Erie House Television. It's a trailer, but it's an unusual trailer in that they're not showing a whole lot from the movie. They show a little, but not a whole lot. Actually, it has Peter Lorre talking to the female star of the movie on the telephone about the movie. And it's pretty interesting. It's a different kind of trailer.
Yeah. He was an interesting guy. He truly was. And quite the artist, and he too, as so many of them did, as television started eating into, you know, the movies and their budgets and such, you know, he was one of those that was kind of basically kind of left behind and found complete frustrations in the roles that he was allowed to take many times.
Yeah, partly from being typecast, I'm sure, but he didn't lose his abilities, and he got the opportunity to delve into humor along with Vincent Price in some of the Corman films that he was
in. Yes, yeah, those were such a treasure.
Great.
Because he loved to ad lib and go off script, and Karloff hated that. He wanted it. You see, this is a script. It was written this way for a reason. You do it that way. And Vincent Price, when the three of them were working together, he could go either way. He could either go off script or he could stay on script. And so he was fine with it. It was just Karloff hated it when they did that.
And I bet you in a lot of cases, Price had to be a catalyst between the two because he did have that ability, and I'm sure all of them had mutual respect for one another.
Yes.
You don't hear of any bad blood between any of those. And that great film they did, I can't remember the title.
Comedy of Terror or something?
Comedy of Terror. Yeah. You had Boris Karloff, you had Vincent Price, you had Peter Lorre. Basil Rathbone is in it.
Yes. And he was hilarious in that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the, got to be one of the funniest, quote-unquote, horror, non-horror films out there, I think.
We'll have to drag that topic out again. We've talked about humorous horror films before, but there's so many of them. The Little Shop of Horrors is just such a well-done movie for such a low budget. The humor and the actors just gelled together. You had Dick Miller in there. You had, what was the big guy's name that played Mushnik?
Wells. That, and you go back to the...
Mel Wells, that's it. Mel Wells.
The monster flicks that Abbott Costello did, and Ghost Breaker with Bob Hope.
Yeah.
So many great. And ghosts were always a great topic for, comedy as well as the horror type things.
Yeah. Comedy is a good. You'll find a lot of horror films will have small elements of comedy from time to time just for relief, to relieve the tension, so they can turn around and build it back up on you again later. Gosh, even in Halloween, I remember the very first Halloween movie, the police character was scared by Donald Pleasance. There was a jump scare there, a false scare, and it was quite comical. And of course, they go back to building up the tension as the killer is running rampant. But comedy and horror go together, I think.
Well, they do. I think when you've got some comedy in there, it helps the levity of when it enhances, I guess, the horror. That's why I usually have a comedic character within a horror story as well, I think. It makes that frightening part so much more frightening.
Yes. Just by contrast. Absolutely. Well, Dave, let's get ready for next week. We've got we'll be hanged.
We're going to take everybody hostage next week.
Yes, we're going to keep you captive with these great stories of kidnapping and hostage taking.
That's right.
Great shows, too. I mean, some of the best ones. In fact, going into early June, this is what you got coming up, folks. You got Gunsmokes, Radio Stage, Suspense, Inner Sanctum, X-1, The Weird Circle, and The Unexpected. And that's all coming up in the next couple of weeks. So.
And you know what, also, Dale, I want to promote this because it looks like it's all going to happen very soon here. We're going to have some special guests from the Shoestring Radio Theater, and they have been producing radio dramas for 25 years now. And we're going to share not only a couple of their stories, but Monica Sullivan and her producer, who have been there from the very beginning. We're going to have an interview with them, as well as share two of their stories, a great horror story by called Wild Hunting, and a story from a guy named Dave Binkley that they put on The Mirror. And,
oh, I know that guy.
Heard of him. He never shuts up usually, but, you know, we'll... But I'm really kind of excited about that. I mean, when you realize that with little to no budget, and we understand that, Dale, they have produced radio dramas for 25 years now, and that means they ran longer than Suspense, longer than Escape, longer than many shows combined by having run for 25 years. And I think asking them how they got the idea, how they got it. And why they keep doing it after all these years, you know, is even a fair question. So I'm looking forward to that show and sharing that with everyone.
I am too. And, folks, you will truly enjoy them. Just like we've heard Dave's, you know, modern contemporary stories, these folks are accomplished, and you're going to enjoy this. It's going to be just as good, and in some cases, in some aspects, even better than some of these old-time radio shows.
It could be. I'm just looking forward to it, and having some accomplished special guests like we're having is just a great, amazing thing. I'm just excited. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it'll be a treat and an honor to have them here, and I'm looking forward to it too. Everyone, enjoy yourselves and go and visit us at Eerie House Television. Thanks. We'll see you next week or just back here whenever you feel like it in the archives. We'll see you next time.
Good night,
Jimmy. Say good night, Dave.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.